Welcome to the ThinkSpace podcast with myself, John Stoskowski, and Danny Massaro. Our goal with this podcast is a simple one. We discuss and dissect a prescient topic, issue, or theme that we think is interesting and might help us humans better understand why we think, feel, and do what we do. If you'd like to engage in these types of conversations too, you can check out thinkspace.academy for a unique cohort-based course that will help you think critically and live authentically. Hope you enjoy the episode. Right, Danny, so today we're going to have a look at one of Friedrich Nietzsche's concepts, some of his concepts that he came up with back in the late 1800s. The specific thing we're going to focus on is the camel, the lion, and the child. And these were three stages, essentially, that Nietzsche came up with that he thought make up a bit of a spiritual transformation that you go through when you're moving towards a flourishing life. And this, he introduced these concepts in one of his core books, really. Probably his most famous book, called Thus Spoke Zarathustra, which is a work of fiction, actually. It's a work of philosophical fiction that he published in three parts, but it was in like from 1883 to, I think, 1885. And this was a really short section in that, a really short chapter of only a few pages, where he outlined these three stages of spiritual transformation. And that's what we're going to have a talk about today, and try and make these three stages in life quite applicable to people's everyday life, really. That's what we're going to try and do. So the first one that he came up with, or the first one that he suggested, is the camel, which we'll get into, which is where we're all born as a camel. And Nietzsche thought that a lot of us tend to stay at that stage. But what he thought we needed to do was move on to becoming a lion, and then eventually a child. That's the three stages that we move through as people on this spiritual journey. So Danny, I don't know if we start on the camel and then see where we get to. So this is the stage, or the phase, that Nietzsche saw as a real, where we're essentially beasts of burden. That's why he titled it the camel. So he sees us, we're all born as camels, and we're these dutiful beasts of burden. And what he saw as the burden was basically all the stuff that we're kind of given from birth, really. And by stuff, I mean things like social conventions, traditions, taboos, the status quo, all these things that we're just given and we're told how to act and how to behave and just how to be. He saw those as the weights that weigh us down. So we have them on our back as camels from the off, really, as well as things like fear, love, truth, death, confusion, learning and the search for knowledge, all these different aspects of human existence. Nietzsche saw those as baggage that we just stick on our backs as camels, and we take the burden on, we embrace it, and we just crack on from there. What do you reckon, Danny? How do you want to jump in from there as a camel?
Well, when I first ever listened to explanations of this story, you know, this little sort of almost like a fable, isn't it? You know, that, you know, you're a person and you go through these three animal type stages, and there's a dragon in there as well, which we'll get to.
Yeah, we'll get to the dragon.
You've got to kill the dragon. It sounded like an old 80s computer game to me.
Yeah,
Zelda or something, and
yeah,
or something like the old Monkey Magic days or something on telly, and it all sounded really weird. But obviously intriguing, and that's the good thing, isn't it? Anything that's like a bit of a story, or something that's condensed into simple stages, yeah, you know, it sounds attractive. So that's obviously, we've picked that for this podcast, because, you know, it's something that you can quite easily remember, associate with. But that doesn't mean that, you know, it's this simple. It isn't that you just go through these three stages and that's all you ever do for all your life. And if you, as long as you know, you get to the end of the game, it's game over and you've done it better than people who didn't. Life's a lot more complex, but let's go with it. Now, the camel seems to me, when I read it, as that feeling that I used to get as a kid, where you were always told what to do. You know, Sunday night, have a bath, you've got to be clean, you've got to look good, you've got to get to bed early, you've got to do your own work. You go into school for 5 days and your next day off is Saturday, and that's just the way it is. Be a good boy and shut up. Don't get into any trouble. Blah, blah, blah. You'll get some food, you know, and so on. And it's that, you know, it's that sense of play your part, there's conventions and rules that we all have to go by, and otherwise it's chaos in society, and that's what we have to do. So, you know, you pick that up quite away. And obviously having my son at the moment, having Leo, just been born, he's like 8 months, coming up to 8 months, and getting to that stage where, already you don't do that, you do this, you don't sit that, you don't put your hand in your mouth when you're already, these things are actually practically very useful. So there's this practical use to being the camel, that we all have to do our bit, and you know, you're told what to do. And then there's also becomes this part of, okay, is that all you're ever going to be? Are you only ever going to be someone who's dutiful, you know, at your core, takes a lot of stuff off people, conforms, you know, even in your adult life, or if you're your teenage years, basically just always be kind of put on and be one of the people that's happy to carry the burden of everybody else and do your bit, whilst perhaps they are the ones going off doing naughty things or new things or collapsing some of the, well, why do we do it like this? Do we have to do it like this? And are there new ways to do things, which is going into the lion phase?
Because it is seen as a noble thing to be. So he does see the camel as, you know, this, it's not a shameful state to be in. It's not like a, you know, something to be looked down upon from a societal perspective. It's a good, it's like a noble thing to be. It's a noble way to live and do your bit. And like you said, do what you're supposed to and crack on and don't question it.
Yeah, and it's links. It's not the same, but there are links to Nietzsche's slave morality, in terms of if you were a slave back in the day, you had to believe that you would go to heaven if you were a good person, because it was like, I can't have any good things happen to me now and take everything I want now because I'm a slave. So I've got to just be a dutiful slave, accept that I am, believe in a God, and then I will be rewarded in heaven. Whereas all the leaders and all the people who owned the slaves were a bit more like, yeah, okay, we'll take our chances with heaven and hell. We'll just have all the power and the fun now while we're actually alive. So the camel, there's a dutiful element to it, an ethical, moral thing to it, in terms of, you know, do what you're told, don't cause anybody any fuss, and be a hard worker. A good example in perhaps modern life is get a car, buy a house, get a mortgage, do a job, you know, thank your lucky stars, do your bit, be a good neighbor, you know, just keep your head down, fit into convention, fit into the culture, don't ask too many questions, you know, get on with it. And it's you're a good citizen.
And those things, as the camel as well, there. Remember when we talked about in the Frankl episode that we did, and probably a couple of others, when we talked about meaning, you know, what gives people meaning in life. And Nietzsche was very much about these burdens that we're given, and we better, they can give you meaning in life, but it's pre-prescribed meaning, isn't it? It's like, don't you be coming up with your own meaning and questioning stuff. Here's the meaning of life, like you said, go to school, yeah, go to uni, get a job, work till whatever, retire, now you can chill for a bit, and then...
Any group that you go to, anywhere where there's already a pre-established set of rules, be a dutiful follower of this. Even if you're into a rock band, you know, you might think you're being rebellious, but essentially you buy their music, their remixes, their t-shirts, you dance like they tell you to dance, you know, before you, it's not like a strong cult, but it's like a low level,
and then what needs to sacrifice I must do if we just carry on as the camel and we just adhere to the way things are and the way that we should be. Essentially what we're doing is we're denying ourselves what we want to do. So we're taking our own choice and autonomy out of it, and we're just doing what we've been burdened with, what we've been given. He was saying that if you do that, you're denying what you yourself want to be, the person that you want to be or that you could be. So what he was saying was like, look, essentially what you've got to do as a camel, you've basically got to shed some of these weight, and you've got to get the burden off your back and stand up for yourself and stand up for your own purpose. And that's when the camel gets to that stage, Nietzsche called that the loneliest desert. So when the camel enters that phase where it kind of starts thinking, hang on, what is this? Is this it kind of thing? Is this all life's about? And it is just this pre-prescribed script that you're almost living. Mm. He said that you start to feel a little bit of this alienation coming in, and you start to feel different because you maybe are starting to look around and go, hang on, is this it? that there's got to be more to it than that, you know, just doing what society demands that you do. So you find yourself questioning a little bit. And he said it's in the desert where that's where the camel essentially has to move into that next phase, isn't it? Where the camel then needs to become a lion, basically. The camel's basically, this is how I read it and how I interpret it. You might have a different interpretation that we can discuss. Yeah. But basically the camel starts discovering that there actually isn't any universal truth. There isn't, like we said, pre-prescribed meaning to life that you've got to abide by, and that's the only way it's got to be. And the camel then, when it realizes that, it maybe starts to reject it a little bit, that script that it's been given. And this is an interesting bit for me where it switches and it brings in some other concepts. So the episode that we did on nihilism, what can happen is if the camel gets in that fate, it's like, right, well, life's either basically totally meaningless and there's no point, which is the nihilism aspect of it, essentially. Or it has the choice to go, no, that means that I can do what I want. I can choose my own meaning. I can choose my own path. Mm. I'm free. I can start to create my own meanings and virtues in life and go down that path, which is where the lion comes in. So yeah, this is where the camel transforms into the lion, gets a bit more self-confident, gets a bit more self-determined, and starts choosing its own destiny, really. Starts taking power into its own hands rather than the script that it's being given. Do you see that any differently or not? Or is that kind of how you...
No, that's, you explained it well, I think, there. The camel goes into the desert. Okay, Nietzsche's idea of going into the desert and being lonely, and comes across a dragon. But the dragon, this mighty dragon, and the dragon, you know, which is a metaphor for the, you know, the loneliness or the isolation feeling of I'm sick of being told what to do. I'm feeling penned in and boxed in. I don't, you know, I've got myself into a situation in life where I'm feeling like I need to like grow. And I need, you know, I need to stop just basically, you know, doing the same tasks, doing the same job, being the same type of person as I've always been. Have, you know, and like have my holiday, that, you know, have my odd week off here and there. Get, you know, have a week, you know, have a few drinks when I go out. Enjoy Christmas. You know, you have to enjoy Christmas, and you have to buy things at Christmas. That's a fact. You know. Not whether or not Christmas is good or bad. No, you have to. It's a time for, you know, for fun. A good camel would totally do Christmas as you should, particularly in the modern way as a consumer Christmas. It's a, you know, as if it's it's been sent down by the gods, written in old time. You have to do that. So I remember going through that phase when I was at work and I left work. I remember getting really disillusioned for a year, and I was in that desert place, and it was like it was a bit like the dragon appears of what Nietzsche called thou shalt. And thou shalt is that all the scales on the dragon, they say there were hundreds of scales on the dragon, each one of the scales of the dragon had a, you know, a thou shalt, you know, so don't do this, do this, be a good person, you know, go to work, listen to the, you know, play, you know, don't break the rules. But, you know, all your versions, and that there could be thou shalts that you'd had since you were like one years old, you know, as a baby, all the way through school. Or they could be thou shalts like from the government yesterday, you know, saying thou shalt stay in your house when COVID's on, or thou shalt have a vaccine, thou shalt, you know, now save your money and don't spend it too much. And you know, whatever it, you know, whatever these messages coming through all the time. So they can be very like recent thou shalts, or they can be like ones you've had all your life and carried. So the lion basically has to be, camel can't deal with that. So the camel has to turn into a lion to roar and fight and smash these scales off this dragon and stand up for itself. So that's the kind of metaphor. And it was about that time Nietzsche was like, that people fear their higher self because when it speaks demandingly. And this is that phase of like, do I stay the camel and sort of talk myself out of everything? Or do I listen to this higher self, which is the lion, properly listen to it, because it's really, really going to request that I get my, you know, shit together, basically. Get action orientated and start sorting my situations out and standing up for myself. And, you know, that's essentially what Nietzsche's saying, you know, that it's difficult because your higher self, if you truly listen to it, speaks demandingly, which is partly Nietzsche's our concept of will to power. That not that we all have wills to be powerful and control everybody, that we want to exert influence on our situations. You know, we all want ultimately the things we care about in our small little worlds, you know, we want those things to always kind of go our way. You know, we want to be comfortable. We want to be we want to be safe. We want all these tiny little things. We want them to go our way. So that the only way you can get them, more of those things, is to become the lion. So if you like peace and you genuinely like pottering around and not working every hour God sends, you have got to roar against the thou shalt of the 40-hour week. You have to be able to go and envisage and commit to action that can get you maybe a 20-hour week, you know, over time. But that's a hard thing to do. It's easier to just carry on in the camel version, convince yourself that the higher voice is deluded and wrong and too demanding and whatever, and just remain the camel and not take the dragon on. Essentially, you know, that's essentially it. And I see that in sports. You know, obviously, you know, I always bring up sports because I work in sports. You get certain characters in sport that stand up to the conventions of the way the game is played at the time, and they stand up to their own limits of maybe what they've always considered themselves to be as performers. And sometimes they can, not in every single scenario or every facet of the game, but they can almost beat out and develop themselves beyond self-concepts that they had of themselves, such as, well, I've never been fit, or I've never been skillful, or I've never been good at this part of my game. The higher self says, no, you can if you really, really work at it, and you need to break out of that. In other words, you can change. You can develop yourself, but it's going to take a lot of work. Now, that can't happen all the time, but Nietzsche was saying, do it anyway. Go for it. You know, don't die wondering. Go for it. And, you know, he said it's in the pursuit, wasn't it? It was in the pursuit of these, you know, ultimately he wants us to get to the Superman level, the Ubermensch, you know, which he believed was, you know, like there's been ape, then there's been man, and then he believed one day Ubermensch will be on the planet, which is another thing, this Superman type character. But he said it's in the progress through these stages that we must aim if we want to live this fulfilling existence.
Well, you can see the language changes. So once you get into this lion stage, you know, clearly the metaphor becomes, and he's clearly used it for that reason, you know, you start to think about it, symbolizes stuff like courage, tenacity. He even talks about rage, you know, getting that rage and fire inside you to really go, no, I'm grabbing this, I'm taking this by the you-know-whats, and I'm going for it. I'm not just settling, I'm going to go for it big time.
Yeah.
One of his phrases that he uses in the book is, he calls it the sacred no. So that ability to just, or that represents the ability to just reject all that externality, so all that external demand and control that's been put on you, all those traditions and values and stuff. He called it the sacred no, where you turn around and just go, no, I'm not having this. So that lying, like the raw that you talked about, you're roaring that sacred no, like, no, that's it. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm rejecting anything that's external to me. You know, I'm not doing anything that you tell me to do anymore, because I've got the courage and the tenacity and everything to, I suppose, disillusionment as well, where you get so disillusioned that you get that rage and that courage to go, right, no, I'm empowered now, that empowered raw to just refuse to go along with it.
I think practically, like as a piece of advice, or practically in a modern life, you know, which is obviously a lot more dense and fast paced and so on and multifaceted, the scales that we talk about on the dragon, you might just take one on at a time, or two on. You don't need to just go for every scale at every single time. And you may never get towards the last sort of stage, a child stage, but at least you've gone for it in some areas. And, you know, I see this a lot with some of my friends, and I see this a lot with athletes I've worked with and so on, and observations I make when I watch documentaries and success stories. You know, you see how films like Harry Potter and even Rocky and things, how they're basically the stories about self-transformation. You know, it is about being you're Rocky, you know, you're put on, you're down there, come on, stand up, fight for yourself, do it, be more like this, create this. And then obviously we'll talk about it in a minute, but ultimately then can you get past the lion and basically enjoy and relax and get to the to the place you've now earned to be. Because staying as the lion all your life can end up being equally as limiting as being the camel all your life, because you are nothing without opposition if you're the lion all your life. It's like you're in a constant fight, and there always has to be somebody's wrong, something's not right. And that ends up, I've seen that in people end up being like, without a battle, they're nothing. Without drama, without, you know, without something to moan about, without bad news, without, you know, they've nowhere to go. There's no room just to be the child, which...
Well, I think it's an important distinction to make as well, that it doesn't mean when you're in this lion stage, it's not that everything external that isn't your choice is wrong or is bullshit or is, you know, should be rejected. He's not getting at that, because clearly there are some traditions and social things that do bind society, and they're good things, aren't they? Whether it's morally or ethically and those kind of things. So he's not saying reject.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with being the camel. Like, there's nothing wrong with camel elements, like you say.
No, he's not saying reject all that. What he is kind of saying is, it's the fact that it originates from an external authority that you're rejecting. It's not the thing itself, yes. Which is, it's a subtle distinction, I think, because it does, I think it can be quite tempting to see the lion as just this rebellious counterculture. Mm-hmm. You just rebel against every single thing because your sole aim is to just be counter the culture. But there are some parts of the culture that are good and would be positive for you as an individual.
Well, it's that question, you know, when I introduced Sartre as your bad faith that was in previous episodes, I sometimes say to sports coaches, why do you do what you do? Why do you choose to still be a coach every day? Now, if they do it because they say, I've nothing else to do, I'm supposed to be nice. If you make your own meaning out of why you do what you do. And that's that, you know, that so Sartre, who came after Nietzsche and used his ideas through Heidegger and so on, who was influenced by Nietzsche, that's a great point. It's in your own mind, it's why are you a convention? Are you doing it in a camel way where you feel persecuted and put on? Or are you consciously gone through that and doing the same thing, but doing it for valid reasons of your own will?
So yeah. So as the lion, you are free to abide by whatever you want to, because it's what you want to do. So you might still abide by some things that the people around you are doing and might even tell you to do, but it's because you've chosen to do them, not because you've been told to do them.
This is a great, that's the distinction. You have an athlete who loves playing squash on the world tour and battling away every tournament. You've got some of them just go, oh God, I've got to go to another tournament now. Like the PSA, the organization, or the squash gods, or are making them do it. And sometimes it's like, I'll say, don't go. Who entered you into that tournament? And they go, I did. I say, oh, that's interesting, isn't it? So you did enter it? Yeah. Right. Okay. Interesting. You know, because they go around as if they've been forced into things, you know, people forget like that they it's what's the mode in which you go into this job or to this tournament or to this action. That's, you know, so if I have people who whinge a lot and complain about things a lot, you know, that can just be nice gossip and what whinging, just a general mode. But overall, it always seems to me that the whingers, the people that always have a little complaint, who feel put on and bound, and I can't wait to get to summer to have a rest, or soon gonna, you know, they almost wish their lives away. These little moments where they can almost feel like they're free from being put on. And I would say, either sort your head out and start to create some, you know, fundamental reasons why you still want to do what you do, or get out of there. Now, you are hamstrung, obviously, by conventions such as finance. And you know, if you have a family to look after and you have other external factors, only the individual knows that. But there's still always a little, like Frankl said, there's always still room to change your attitude. There's still room to get perspectives and do some work and change your attitude, so that you have the more of the attitude of perhaps the lion who feels in control and of their own choosing, than to stay in that feeling that you're a dutiful camel doing, being a good little girl, a good little boy in life, that you can sometimes never grow out of and end up resenting yourself for it in later years in life. And that's what Nietzsche called a bit on the regret side. You don't want to get to a state where you've regretted never transforming past the camel. Equally, I think moving on to the child, you also never want to regret the fact that you kind of got a bit bitter and always in sort of, you know, rebellion in a way, and always in bitter fighting convention by being the lion too much, and never enjoying the innocence of and the fun and the spontaneity of the child stage, which is the third stage.
Well, that's a useful bridge to that. So I mentioned earlier about nihilism. I think Nietzsche thought that that's probably a danger of the lion phase, isn't it? That you can get stuck in that. It becomes quite nihilistic, where if you've decided, well, nothing has any meaning, no meaning exists anywhere, because you've shed all the weight off your back and all the baggage that you had as the camel, you can get stuck there and just become too nihilistic. Because he talks about it, you can't in that phase really come, so you can reject values, but you can't really come up with your own either. In some respects, so you can choose particular values, but you can't really come up with invent your own new values in that phase, which is where he bridged it into the child. So for him, that childlike spirit of happiness, health, well-being, that's vital to those things, to have that childlike outlook on life. He calls the child, or he says, it's innocence of forgetting, a new beginning, a sport, a self-propelling wheel, a sacred yes. So we've moved from the sacred no, where you can just reject everything, so you've gone back to this almost newborn state where you don't really know anything about the world, because you haven't been burdened with all the stuff that the camel's got, because you're just too, you've never seen it before. So everything for you is new. You don't have the structures and the values that adults have that make them behave in certain ways. So everything is original. Everything is creative. It's joyful. It's that beginner's mind that here, like in Zen Buddhism, don't you hear a lot? You know, just go back to that beginner's mind where you're just inquisitive. Everything's life affirming. Everything's about just what's new, everything's fresh. It's new stimulus all the time. It's that real childlike notion, I suppose.
Yeah, what's interesting for me is that, like, having when I had Leo recently, and obviously we got a puppy as well. Why are puppies and babies like really, you know, but for a moment when you're around them, or especially see them growing, you feel the innocence of the child, like, as in the, and also the wonderment. I think that's an interesting, you know, I'll point to a tree or something, and a bird, and and the same with a dog. You know, a dog, you can go on the same walk every day and it loves it. You know, it's you might say, well, it's stupid, but, you know, obviously a dog is a dog. Like, it doesn't think like a human. It doesn't think through time, so it's obviously not as stressed, as we talked about in the Heidegger, Dasein stuff. But there is something you can learn through that. There's something about the third stage. So it's this enthusiasm, it's the ability to take part in your days and see things as quite original opportunity. It's to notice the good stuff, you know, because the bad stuff's there anyway and it will happen. It's to taste your food properly and to try things. It's to be experimental and incurious and all these type things. So with an athlete, you know, that I talk, I work with a lot of players in my field in squash that kind of get to the top, you know, elite professionals, and a lot of them do like amazing, to be honest. Like, and when you get to the top like that, and you've battled your way up there in a way by being the lion and enemies and shout, I'm going to do this, and proving people wrong. You know, a lot of the energy for Laura anyway came from proving someone wrong and plowing your own furrow, and, you know, like, it's done with an enthusiasm, but the core thing is, like, you're going to be the lion, you're going to take it, you're going to will to power, you're going to get to the top of your hierarchy, right? And you get there and you have it for a bit, and then you got to be really careful that, you know, when that looks like it's going to be going away, the battles are going to end, and you're kind of going to go into like a post-retirement kind of contentment. You've got to be really careful that you're not still craving being the lion, that mode has trapped you in. In other words, in a way, I see it as kind of growing old gracefully, like exiting in the child spirit of, well, I don't win anymore, and I don't battle anymore, but I've done that, been there, climbed my mountains, and now I'm going to enjoy the fruits of that, and I'm going to chill out and maybe help some other people and just explore new things and, you know, still play the game, but play it for different reasons. And I've had some players that have managed to do that really well and still play squash. And people say, why do they still play? You know, they're not number one in the world anymore. They must be depressed. And they're not. They love just hitting balls, playing, knocking it around. Perhaps like older golfers who just come back and play the Open, you know, and they don't probably not going to fight every day to win it. But they're just going to relax into this joyful, spontaneous state of still having a relationship with the game and other things in their lives. And what I do see a lot of performers, they get stuck without that battle. They get stuck. They fear not being the lion anymore, and they find it difficult to go to the child. And what can then happen, rather than going to the child, in my opinion, they go back to the camel and become a bit of a slave again to convention in terms of, oh no, I must have a job. I must have a purpose. I must do something. And take jobs like coaching jobs or other things, or, you know, and so on, and just for the sake of thou shalt be busy, thou shalt have a job, thou shalt not sit around enjoying themselves too much, thou shalt not have peace, thou shalt be useful, thou shalt be popular, thou shalt be significant, you know, thou shalt have 50,000 Twitter followers. You know, when one has been at the top of your sport, it comes with a lot of thou shalt. So they can slip back into being the camel and never be free of the burden that they've created for themselves of being so successful. You know, even with finances, thou shalt maintain a certain level of finance and popularity and influence. Whereas I think in pop stars, in business people, in sports, if they can kind of let that go, and not regress back to not regress back into the camel without them knowing it. If you can go more forwards into the spontaneous camel, the most spontaneous child, and feel free and playful, then that to me is a much better mode of being. And that is where Nietzsche's, this Nietzsche story he cooked up is absolutely brilliant for me.
And I suppose that's where, because he does talk a lot about living dangerously as part of this child phase, which is, it's a little bit of a strange one, isn't it? Because most parents, the last thing they want the kid to be doing is taking loads of risks and, you know, getting in dangerous situations and stuff. Although that's probably how we learn the most as kids, isn't it?
Yeah, but the danger isn't danger as in I'm going to fall off a rock face or get run over by a car. The danger is in new openings.
Yeah, so he's talking about getting outside of your comfort zone, making decisions. Like you've mentioned before in a couple of episodes, you know, making decisions as if you've already lived once.
Yes.
So you've kind of had your life and now you've kind of done that and you're making the decision as if you've already made this decision before.
Yeah.
And you're maybe not just going on whatever's the safe option. You're taking a risk. You're living a little bit dangerously, getting a bit uncomfortable. Nietzsche was really, he was mad on that stuff, which we talked about earlier before we started recording. That's not the way he's painted, I don't think, in popular, in mainstream stuff where you see Nietzsche pop up.
Yeah.
He's often looked as this quite dark character. He's quite nihilistic and, you know, he's often linked with like depression and stuff like that, where he's actually one of the most positive philosophers you can read, really, when you get into it. He's all about just getting after it. And
yeah, it's interesting because like, you know, like Frankl, who we did in Man's Search for Meaning, he suggested that the thing that, with his logotherapy, that you should live your life as if you've already lived it and you're making a better choice this time. What Nietzsche suggested was slightly different. He was suggesting a more fatty, which was basically love your fate. So whatever has gone on in the past, carry on living as if you was glad that that thing happened. Like include it into your journey and your transformation. So everything that happened to you is part of the tapestry of your development towards the Übermensch. So everything, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger is Nietzsche, isn't it? So it's like, yeah, that is basically his thing. Not try and keep second guessing yourself, but, you know, in terms of making great decisions all the time. But whatever happens to you, because, you know, absurd things and things come in by chance. And I talk about this a lot with athletes, you know, there's all sorts of random things come in, the opponent, how easy the opponent was or how much the opponent resisted, form, the weather, chance, you know, all these things happen in life, absurd things. No matter what goes on, how can you keep moving on in your spirit anyway? by almost embracing what the fact that it happened. And we get that a lot, don't we? And you see people who sometimes wonder, how do they survive these tragedies and how do they survive awful things that go on? And the ones that seem to do well, you know, it is a bit stoic, isn't it? It's linked to the stoic stuff. But his thing of a more fatty, love your fate, was like this, you know, Ken Wilber thing as well about transcend and include everything that you've, you know, in these stage developments of your life, you know, go forwards and make it better because of what's happened before. We might do an episode on it, we would say that, but that George Carlin documentary, you know, absolutely brilliant comedian. And the documentary was amazing because it showed all the developmental stages of his life and how he, at times he got stuck in a stage and stuck in a phase, and then took him a few years to kind of realize it, but admitted it and moved out of it and moved on. And I think that's commendable. And I think that's going back to your, you know, your films, your Harry Potter things, your Rocky. We are touched, and we like people who take risks and try and do things and move on, but end up happy, you know, not bitter. It's lovely to see. I love seeing rock musicians and you know, and sports stars and actresses who, you know, who have had the moment in the sun and they've been really, really brilliant. And they might still have now and again make a comeback, but you then read about them or see them and they're really happy after it. You know, they're happy that they've had the moment, everything's good, and it went on and turned out pretty well.
It's basically every Disney film for the last 70 years, isn't it?
Yeah, you see Tiger Woods and he actually finally smiles after 40, 50 years, and he laughs at himself or trips up, and you see him have a bit of fun and he can laugh at himself and he can relax, play with his kids, not be so serious. He actually heartwarms because you're a bit like, oh, it's worth it then. Like, they've reached the absolute pinnacle of everything and it looks good. They're not still going around with a face on like Rory McIlroy sometimes does, you know, or they're not on the telly whinging about the state of the world and everything. And I don't mean in a good, you know, to use their influence well. I just generally mean still needing attention and being bitter and moaning about things. Because I think we know that that doesn't just happen. I think we kind of know that for most people, it takes work and effort to become the child. It isn't just you just slip into it and it's easy. You kind of actively have to chill out. You actively have to let go of things and relax.
Maybe not Nietzsche called it, but it's in this stage, you're basically celebrating your powers. So I think the athlete analogy is a good one, isn't it? Because they've clearly got you can almost plot it on a graph, can't you? Like the ups and downs. And then obviously when they hit a pinnacle, that is the pinnacle. You know, maybe not as a person, but in terms of like professional achievements, let's call it.
Yeah.
And then it slopes back down, doesn't it? Yeah. Because they retire and et cetera, et cetera. And he saw the child phase as, you know, that's where you're celebrating that power that you've got now, that childlike mentality. And it's about then... Everything then becomes an act of affirmation rather than reactive struggle. So like you said, like going back to the lion and maybe even the camel, where everything then to give you just something to get up for in the morning, I suppose, it becomes, well, I need something to react against and struggle against and like getting messed up with external forces again.
Yeah.
He's like, no, just celebrate the power that you've got on that journey that you've just talked about. It is hard to come through the stages, but now you're here, like just enjoy it and celebrate it.
Well, it can be worrying to be so happy all the time. It can start. Why am I feeling quite content? You know, how come I've not got into any drama lately? Or why am I not too interested in the news? Or why?
And we are that's part of the camel's baggage. We're told.
Yeah.
Or maybe not even explicitly told, but everything is hinting at you.
Yeah.
That's not what it's about. You should constantly be working, striving, doing stuff, being busy. Don't you dare just sit back and be happy, because that doesn't, you know, especially in a capitalism-driven society, the whole thing is based on you striving to want things and need things and then work to buy them and spend and all that stuff.
Yeah.
The last thing they probably want is a content population just sitting there in the child state.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like celebrating the power.
Yeah, that's it. You know, being, you know, as with Dasein, you know, back to just being in the world and kind of being comfortable with that and days where you don't purchase things. Imagine that.
Yeah. not needing to buy to be happy, you know, being happy with what you've got, or maybe even getting rid of stuff that you've got.
Well, yeah, exactly. And it's not going full on, you know, let's say that, you know, you join the, you have friends who go, right, I've sussed it now, I've joined the minimalist movement.
Yeah.
And they go off for 3 years being minimal and with all these rules again. Well, they're just being a camel to the movement. I mean, you know, a natural way of minimizing is just to sort of evolve into maybe, oh, I've just noticed I've not been buying as much and I've been clearing a few things out because I've been busy walking, cooking, watching some films, reading some books, doing some music, kicking around, playing sport again, snoozing, bird watching, whatever, you know. Like, I've just been like being and enjoying bits and bats of stuff, watching some old films, doing this, doing that. I haven't really found myself anxious enough to need to be booking holidays of a lifetime and pick me ups and so on. Now, that doesn't mean holidays are no good and nights out and planning weddings and all these things, you know, they're all parts of life. But again, as you're starting to get older, perhaps then the child, you know, and you know, I've seen it's vital. I've seen a, you know, that stereotypical old cranky person, don't you? You know, that's bitter to the end. Maybe there's an element of that's their natural child personality. You know, if it's truly them and they're sort of happy in their, you know, the way that they're cranky and that's like their version. But then you genuinely, you know, and they can always laugh at themselves. They're quite fun. I had a great sports coach I knew, Malcolm, who was like that. He was very, you know, very, what from the outside looked like a bit severe and strict and cranky, but inside, you know, and how he actually was, he was like a big kid. And I know, you know, other good coaches, they're like big kids, you know, but the external appearance is like they're quite serious, you know.
There's a guy I've been playing golf with on the morning. Because we both play early. Tommy is called. He must be. He must be in his early 70s, 71, 72. Yeah. He plays off 21, but he's like, hates slow play. He's like, he starts getting proper stressed and anxious if the round's slow. So he's dead nice to play with. But to look at him, covered in tattoos, like, he's constantly got a cigar in his mouth. Like, you know, he's proper, like, angsty,
yeah.
But nice to be around. Yeah. And he's one of those people you can just tell. He's fun with it, but you can tell he's got a dark past. Like, he used to run pubs back in Leeds over in Yorkshire, yeah, and stuff.
Right.
And he'll tell me little stories about this pub that he ran and that. And, you know, you could tell he's been around gangsters and just, you can imagine, like, Yorkshire in the 60s, yeah, and 70s, you know, like nightlife.
Yeah, just, yeah.
Hard blood. But he's a bit like that. I think most people would just run a mile. They wouldn't go near him because he just looks aggressive and a bit stressed and that. But once you get to know him, he's like a little cuddly teddy bear. Like, I love playing golf with him, yeah, just because he's dead quiet. And you just have a really good chat and, like,
yeah,
just about mad stuff. And then off we go with our day, like, separate.
Yeah, and, you know, you hear terminology like they've become comfortable in their own skin.
Yeah.
I think that's a child thing, isn't it? You're not a bit like, you know, it's not childish. You know, like, it's not, oh my God, right, I'm getting to an age and I still need to be attractive. So I'm going to get my lips full of, you know, whatever they pump up the lips with. I'm going to get chemicals put in my face, loads of tattoos and try my best to look like I'm actually the child. You know, that's not it. That's childish. That's the camel again, going to fashion conventions of, you know, when you see people comfortable in their own skin and growing old appropriately, gracefully, as you might say, and getting and they're accepting it and going with it and laughing at themselves, but still going into new ventures and taking risks and doing things that they might have laughed at themselves for doing, like back in, you know, 10 years before or 20 years back, and letting go, I just, you know, intuitively see that as a sign of what Nietzsche's talking about.
Yeah,
you know, escaping the lion, escape the camel, moving forward into this relaxed state. That's still, I mean, a child isn't a pushover. Right? We know you're stubborn, and a child is still directs energy to things. A child still, you know, can say no, you know, and it's, I don't want to do that. But it's this, again, it's the spirit, isn't it? This is all about the spirit. It's the metamorphosis of spirit. It's not necessarily the metamorphosis of behavior, even though it obviously follows, but it's the spirit in which you do things. You know, I see some people, for example, they'll have had a rebel spirit, let's say like a punk type spirit from the 70s, and they like the original, you know, the bands, the punk, the people that tend to, you know, blow open what society is and all the anarchists and type things. And they'll stay with that, but then they can never let it go. So right till they can never enjoy, you know, Christmas, or they can never enjoy children, or they can never enjoy, you know, going shopping. Because it's nice to go shopping. It's nice to eat a McDonald's, and it's nice to have a good time at Christmas, and it's nice to do, you know, those little things that are, if the spirit in which you do it is okay. And they don't, you know, so they'll stay stuck in anarchist mode, as if there's some like original constant Liam Gallagher figure who actually is grown and gone a bit childish, I think. But you know, you won't catch me doing that. And it's like, it's good that if one day they do catch themselves doing that and laugh at themselves and go, oh, well, who would have believed I would have done this? If the spirit of it is because they've become free again. You know, and I think also, I think it's easy nowadays to get down on the human race really easily. So it's easy to go into the lion part about, you know, the government or this. You know, the leaders of this is this, and so on. Modern life's awful. And as if, you know, you have a platform on social media, so you're barking, you're roaring that out in your opinions all the time. And you find. There's a way of appreciating that stuff and knowing that things aren't perfect, but you don't always have to be like silly fodder to those provocations all the time. You can almost not care. You could take action if you had to take action and want to take action, but you don't have to keep being in this modern tussle of having opinions and battling everything all the time and being searching for the negative side. I got people who I know that have got, you know, what they might call well-being issues, and part of the problem, I think, is they're constantly in this social media battle with anyone that they can find, particularly government and things, and they're coming across all the time like they're this, you know, lion roaring against the machine, and they're quite fun people, but fundamentally you can feel that if they can't let it go, and it's quite tiring to be around, you know.
Well, just to kind of bring us to a close, there are the three stages or the metamorphoses of that Nietzsche came up with: camel, lion, and child. But it's not a fourth level, but there's a level that sits above that, which we mentioned earlier, the Übermensch. And what Nietzsche was getting at with that was, you'll see it termed like the Superman, the Overman. They're all essentially the same thing. But what he was saying was, this is not an additional level or an additional stage. This is something that was pretty much is impossible to achieve. So it's just an ideal that you can strive for. It's not a destination that you're ever likely to get to. But he saw the Overman in a sense where, you know, he thought the best human beings are what he called free spirits. The Overman is essentially that person who's, they've got rid of the weight that they were carrying as the camel, they've slayed the dragon when they were the lion, now they're living like the child. And it's kind of like the next bit above that, really, where you've overcome yourself. Yeah. Or the people have overcome themselves. You've overcome your human nature. You've got out of the bondage of the human condition, you might call it. And you're just living in that liberated state, expressing yourself fully, totally in control of your circumstances or improving your circumstances. And it's just that inhibition from societal influence as the Overman, pure individuality, in charge of your own destiny, you know, dancing to the beat of your own drum, all that stuff. That's how he saw the Übermensch.
Which was self-overcoming, wasn't it?
This self-overcoming, yeah. But a bit like you alluded to it earlier, people find that terrifying. So that self-overcoming that he talked about, or finding your higher self,
yeah,
people are terrified of that because it is so demanding of you to kind of even strive to that.
Yeah, I've heard, you know, Joe Campbell, who was, you know, big into the original movement of coaching, Joseph Campbell.
He's everything's about stories, isn't it? Everything's a story and a narrative for the hero's journey, I think was it called?
Yeah, yes. That's it. Yeah, I did a lot of the heroic stages, heroic journeys and all this thing, and influenced, you know, by Carl Jung and things like that, and these stereotypes of life. So a little similar to this Nietzsche thing, you know, stereotypes and using these types of stories and icons and characters to represent modes of being. So I think that he was saying something about like what he recommends eventually to his clients and his students was to go after the highest bliss all the time. You know, the thing that they were, the thing that in their life when they look back makes them think, you know what, that was probably when I was most like buzzing, you know, like as in affinity. I was mentioning to my mum the other week, we were having a chat about something and she was on about like horses and saying, I have to, you know, get back involved with horses, you know, before, you know, I pass on basically at some point. Because that is, was all my life, that it, when I look back at it all, you know, that was the time that I was probably most felt as my highest thing.
And Nietzsche was saying that as well. Nietzsche was saying, look within, we've all got the power to look within ourselves.
Oh, well, he ended up with a horse, didn't he?
Look within ourselves. You've got the power to do that and go, what is the thing that you love the most? What gives you the biggest buzz? Yeah. And then crack on getting after it. You know, you've got the power to do it.
And that's it. And it can be, you know, that can be your arts, your music, if you, you know, gardening, or it can be people. You know, it's the thing that you... You know, would you know? I know people who have, like, you know, I don't know, they'd be art teachers at school, right? Why? Because it was a job they could do. Love art, love drawing, and somehow they worked their way up to being a headmistress or a headmaster, right? And they never are a principal, and they never do art anymore. But they manage people and look after budgets, drive a nice car, live in a big house, go on holidays, and take pictures of how, you know, how great their life is on and put it on Instagram. But they're not painting. You're not getting their hands dirty in the colours and the ideas, and they're not developing their artistic skill. You know, they're not in there being artists. And you know, that is what Nietzsche was saying in terms of like trying ultimately get to the thing that you were like, you know, buzzed off and you do. You know, I think I've found that in myself. I'm by no way means an Ubermensch. I don't necessarily agree with Nietzsche on that you go through these three phases and that's it. I think you go around these three phases all the time, and certain circumstances send you straight back to the camel, straight to the lion, straight. So I don't think it's as clear cut as you just go through these stages for all your life. But for me, one area I do feel where I'm quite proud of myself is when I go, when I teach what I teach and when I coach squash, it never ever feels like a burden. I absolutely love every single lesson I ever coach in squash. Like, it can be anybody, any level, right? And I don't know what it is. And then I look back at, you know, when we did Thrownness on the last episode and we advised people to dig out some old photos. There I am at 3 playing swing ball on my own in a garden, hitting the ball. There must be something about sport and hitting balls, but why I was compelled, that just fits me. So I love that, and I love hitting golf shots. I love practicing on my own, snooker, anything with balls, you know, in terms of sport and coaching and helping. I just in my element, and I think these phrases, you know, in my element, born. Not, it's not like the same as find your one passion in life and go after your dream. I think that's become a bit like everyone has a passion and you must follow your passion. It kind of sounds like that. It isn't really that. It is directive. It's more like, you know, inside yourself, the stuff that makes you feel warm and easy and when you're in your element. And it's like, that doesn't have to become a career, but can you find ways to spend more time doing that in your days? And that is what I think is you can take from the bliss part of moving towards the Ubermensch, that overcome all these other things. But as we always said, it's in all these podcasts, it's highly dependent on your context, your current circumstances, and you can't really take your circumstances out of your life. You know, there are situations that control you. The world acts on you as much as you act on the world. But the times in which you can act on the world and the little ways in which you can influence your predicaments and your circumstances, especially over the long term, you know, little things you do now so that, you know, maybe the direction of your life goes in certain ways, which it meanders and does in certain ways, you can definitely take a lot from Nietzsche there. And lastly, I do think that when you get on that sort of, when you get around an area that you're like, you know, like a fish in water in, and you just comfy in, you start to find, what I've found is, you start to find like-minded people in that area and tap into some unbelievable expertise in that area. So you're all happy and buzzing in that area, and then bits of rivalries and so on. But what you mainly find is like sharing and collaboration of fun and ideas. You're all on the sort of same page and you're all kind of happy. And it's like when you get a few of you together that are really in a good place, it can be really creative and really interesting and fascinating and even more joyous, because you're hanging around with people that are also in their element. And I've found that to be a real boost. And so once you get into that realm, loads of strange things can happen in terms of career development and opportunities and new little branches where you can go down in that area.
And I think they're easy to spot, aren't they? Practically for me, that's a good way to finish it, in terms of, you know what gives you bliss. And if you've got the courage to do it, everyone can look inside and go, what do I do that really gives me that warm, buzzy feeling, that blissful feeling that I just love doing it? Alternatively, everyone knows what feels like a burden. So, you know, like you've talked quite a bit on different episodes about that Sunday night feeling, you know, that everyone used to get whether it was because of work or school or something. That's a burden, isn't it? Everyone feels that, oh, I've got to do this today or I'm doing that. And it's not giving you bliss and joy. But it takes a bit of courage to maybe look at yourself and go, right, can I move more towards the bliss stuff? And I need to try and get rid of some of these burdens that are on me. Some of these, you know, I've been too camel-y in different aspects of my life. Yeah. Maybe it could go the other way. Maybe you've been too much like a lion, like you said, in other aspects of your life. So it's not an either or, but it's maybe just having a bit of a reflection where you go, right, which parts of my life give me most bliss? Which are the biggest burdens? And then they're just like little switches that you can push up and down, I suppose, to get a bit more balance.
And it's the spirit. It's the spirit in which you do your behaviours. Yeah. That's the thing. It's talking about the metamorphosis of your mindset, like before mindset was even developed as a word. It's your spirit, you know, so when you're in the child's spirit, it doesn't mean that you're just like some waster who sits around only doing hobbies. You're very, very energized. You can work hard in patches. You can your output can be tremendous. You know, something that you can sometimes, you know, I found sometimes when I'm in that child state, my output is massive, and then I'm just so tired. I think, how come I'm so knackered when I enjoyed it so much? But it's like, and I'll sometimes think, you know, I won't be working all the time, but when I sometimes stop and think what I do, I think, God, I'm really, really busy. I really put a lot out there, but it never feels like the old feeling I used to get when I had to go to work all the time, you know, and you're clock watching or week watching, trying to get to half term or you're trying to get to a certain date. So you can kind of feel a little bit like, I'm not really working, but you are working and you're of massive value, you know. And when it comes to charge money and things out with players and things, I sometimes think, I'd have done that for free. I'd just like it. And I think, hang on a minute, I'm knackered. It's taking loads out of me, you know, even though I'm in doing it in the child spirit. So don't equate the child spirit to some floaty, like stone bliss sort of hippie thing. You can still be intense and enthusiastic. It's just that it's making you, you've just found your element. You're in the thing that makes you really fizz.
Clearly, like you've mentioned, there's contextual elements to that. So people have just got different life situations and stuff that they've been thrown into. So back to the thrownness, there's stuff that maybe is a little bit outside of control. But Nietzsche said, no, that can still be an excuse. You've still got the power within yourself to overcome those circumstances. So, you know, that's, I think, the message from this stuff for me. I see him as a really positive, particularly around this aspect, character of just embrace life, work out what you want to be, what you want to do, and get cracked on and go after it. That's the way to do it.
Would you recommend anyone read Thus Spoke Zarathustra, though?
No, one of the worst books I've ever read. Genuinely. Like, there's some good little bits in it, especially this, so the camel lion and the child, but that's three pages in the book. The rest of it, or the vast majority of it, is pretty, it's just indecipherable nonsense.
Good thinker, crap writer.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's that or whether it's the fiction element to it, philosophical fiction, but I wouldn't recommend it as a book, but I think there's some good nuggets in that, just takes a bit of work.